Here's Johnny.
Scarefest 6, the largest horror and paranormal convention in the United States, returns to the Lexington Center in Lexington, Kentucky this September on Friday the 13th through Sunday the 15th.
Meet over 40 of your favorite horror and paranormal celebrities, including Sam, Tara, Luna, and Hoyt from True Blood, Carl from The Walking Dead, Aiden from Being Human, Steve and Tango from Ghost Hunters, and Malcolm McDowell from Clockwork Orange. Events include a Friday the 13th bash, film screenings, seminars, and lots of scary merchandise. For tickets and info, visit thescarefest.com.
Scarefest 6, this September, beginning Friday the 13th through Sunday the 15th at the Lexington Center in Lexington, Kentucky. Be brave if you dare, but don't come alone.
Presented by Ghost Chasers International. What are you doing Friday the 13th?
Carrier Radio is brought to you by Amberly Fleming Photography. Quality you expect at prices you deserve. Visit them today at facebook.com/afleming photography and tell her that Carrier Radio sent you.
Hey, this is Dallas from Alien and the Sons of Disaster, and you're listening to Carrier Radio.
Time to kick it from the start, but save the best for last. Just sit back, relax, and ease your minds with Ned and Pat. You never know where they're going or what they're gonna say. They start in Leslie County, they end up on Pirate Bay. They keep the special guests coming like some interviews, disciples. 1 minute it's DDP, then the next it's Shawn Michaels. Retro phenomenons bringing throwback back, like Nico with a symbol or when Patrick's name was Brack. Chuckles in my belly, now it's time to let them out. Ned and Pat, they got the funnies, and Nico's got the rap. So what y'all waiting for? Time to pull you up a seat. Kill the radio. This podcast is yours to keep.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's my pleasure to introduce to you Ned and Pat.
Welcome, everybody. It's Kill Your Radio. We're not on the dial, but we're rocking it with style.
You going to continue with the introductions?
All right. To my left, weighing in it. 14 stone, we've got Pat.
Hey-o!
And to my right, coming out of the woods, it's Forrest.
And I'd just like to add that this has been a Velociraptor-free facility for 36 days now.
Hey!
Hey-o!
Let your chickens roam in peace.
Let your chickens read Dickens.
Yeah.
That was an awkward silence, wasn't it?
What time is it?
It's 11:07.
It's 11:07. Coming up 7 past the hour. It's about 85 degrees outside, and the traffic for Highway 66 is wide open.
As always.
Our man in the chopper. He said we had a four-wheeler come through about 4 hours ago.
He may or may not have had marijuana.
Yeah, you may want to watch out.
He came by with like 12 plants strapped on the back.
Yeah. Remember, if your buddy's four-wheeler's in the creek, help him out.
Share the road. Yeah. This is Kill Your Radio.
And this has been brought to you by the Kentucky Department of Transportation.
Wow.
It's been brought to you by the Jack's Creek Department of Transportation.
Yeah. It was brought to you by Richie Farmer before he huffed all the gas and stole all the money.
Huffed all the gas and got all the hay now. It's not going that far.
Hey now. We don't want to violate FAA rules.
Yeah, they may fly in and get us.
I know.
So, Carrier Radio's back for another week. And Sunday we had the VMAs. And I'm sure that a lot of people watched them. I know I did. And then I made these guys watch them.
Yeah. He's evil like that.
Ned watched unwillingly. Forrest had been already subjected to it earlier in the day. But it's went pretty crazy on Monday and Tuesday. The Facebook stati about Miley Cyrus's performance. So let's go ahead and get right into that, fellas. Forrest, what are your thoughts?
The Bears, man. The Bears. Those Bears will haunt my dreams for eternity.
On to you, Ned.
Tongues.
Twerking.
Twerking.
So seriously, though. In all seriousness.
What group of people sat down and said, okay, we need a foam finger. We need several African-American women wearing giant bear costumes.
Some of them who are rather large.
Mm-hmm.
We need a guy in a Beetlejuice suit.
You need a Beetlejuice suit.
Sounds like a typical Chicago Bears game to me.
Now, what I wonder is, and I've thought about this a lot today, the VMAs have played host to some pretty strange performances. In our younger days, it was Madonna writhing around on the stage singing like a virgin in a cut-up wedding dress.
Yeah.
In Forrest Day, it was Madonna making out with Britney Spears. And then not too long ago, what, Lady Gaga wore a costume made completely out of meat or something like that. So, I mean, what, you know somebody's going to do something crazy.
And it's just a matter of who.
Yeah. I mean, what she done really all that crazy?
It wasn't crazy necessarily, but very awkward. And if she was trying to really be sexy, man, those facial expressions.
She failed.
That was... I don't know. I don't know what was going on. I don't know if she was trying to be crazy and not really... I don't know. It's like she was trolling us or something.
What I wonder is, I've seen Facebook statuses aplenty about how, oh, she was Hannah Montana and blah, blah, and kids and blah, blah, blah. And I say this. No parent should let their kid watch MTV until they're like 21.
Despite the fact that it's marketed solely to young teens.
They should don't watch it. Never. They should never watch it. So any parent who let their kids watch the VMAs, they deserve whatever they get. It's your fault.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't know if a song was going on. It just sounded like a random collage of sounds.
Sound bites.
Yeah. I mean, when it opened up, there was a guy wearing a fedora and playing what looked to be PRS guitar. And I heard no guitar.
That's true. I don't know. It's thrown me for a loop. And it makes me think about back in the day when there was really like music on MTV. And
I know.
And the VMAs gave like, there was a metal category.
Used to be. Didn't like all the bands, but there were a few I liked.
Like Poison played at the VMAs. Bon Jovi, that's where they done that awesome acoustic performance of Wanted Dead or Alive.
Yeah, I
mean, when you really figured out that Richie Sambora was the better singer in the group.
Yeah. Them hair metal guys, they're silly gooses. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there was music being made.
real music.
C.C. DeVille mustered up a few notes.
In his cocaine fury.
Yeah, in his horse, esophagus eroded coke voice.
You reckon he's Bobcat Goldthwait's brother?
Man, he could be.
Because I think they kind of favor each other a little bit.
I know.
Makes you wonder, don't it?
Yeah. It's funny, like Bobcat now, he directs movies and stuff, and he like, I think he like hates that character, like that crazy voice. Because you know, I mean, everybody over here is coming up, we're going to do the voice. He's like, he like goes like cries in his hotel room.
He cries in his pillow.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He used to do comedy at Nirvana shows. Did you know that?
You told me about that.
And he got, like, jumped out on stage naked or something. Like, he set the Tonight Show set on fire, I think, at one point.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. He was a wacky dude, man.
So I made this status that says we're talking about the VMAs and Miley Cyrus for anybody that wants to call in to message us, and we give you the number. Rather than messaging, Coots left a comment that says she had the Hank Hill butt. So you continue talking about Bobcat. I'm going to see if I can find a way to get Coots on the line.
Now, damn it, Bobcat.
Or continue talking about the VMA. Explain.
Your sentence just got eight.
Continue to explain while I do the intern's job.
You remember Kirby's Adventure? I am.
Was that the one for Game Boy or Nintendo or the actual console?
I can't remember which ones was which. Kirby Superstar, I think, was console.
Yeah, that was the one for the
I think Nintendo. Dreamland was Game Boy.
Yeah. Those were the days.
Those were the days when you could fly around a little pink marshmallow.
I remember when I was just a young pink marshmallow flying around.
I know.
Eating hopes and dreams and fireballs and lightning bolts and other assorted manner of hurtful things.
Other assorted manner of hurtful things.
Yeah. Where else can you get this, guys, except on the Kill Your Radio program?
Hopefully nowhere.
For your sakes.
Because if there's more than one place, then something's definitely wrong.
You drove up.
You are drove up.
You're right.
So we're working on getting Coots on the line here.
Yeah.
And anybody else that may want to call in. And while we do that, we are going to go into first segment that we haven't really titled yet. So here we go, folks, with Forrest after his new intro music that I've made.
I just can't believe all the things people say.
On the subject of Miley Cyrus and the VMAs, Stephen Baldwin, brother of Alec Baldwin, who's known for such great movies as Threesome, The Usual Suspects, and one of Pat's favorites, Biodome.
Woo!
And has a tattoo on his shoulder of the letters HM, which, coincidentally enough, he got for Hannah Montana. He got the tattoo after making a pact with Miley Cyrus that would let him be a cameo on the show if he had her initials tattooed on him.
Wow.
It's just...
Is that an even transaction, do you think?
Oh. There we go. Anyway.
Two words. Beaver butt. It produces a delicious flavor that is used for vanilla and strawberry natural flavoring.
You talking about beaver musk?
I thought he said butt.
Butt as in, like, rectum. Is for that those scientifically correct people out there.
Oh,
gosh, I love that.
The Boeing. The
Boing. Gosh, that just turns me on. You're going to have to make me leave the studio if you keep that up. Every year, there's a national hobo convention in Britt, Iowa. Where
what?
Where they elect a new hobo king.
Oh my god.
You know, that's funny that they can group together such transient wandering peoples.
But you know, how do these hobos that live in these places like New York City and LA manage to get to somewhere in an alternate dimension like Iowa?
Are they like sitting up? Are they sitting in the back of a train and like a sparrow brings them a note or something like that? But they know when it is. Like, I have a hard time making it to scheduled events, and I have all the conveniences that a hobo doesn't.
Wouldn't a pigeon be more of a like an animal associated with the hobo instead of a sparrow?
Well, I picked a bird.
Captain Jack Sparrow was a hobo, kinda.
Mm-hmm. How many hobos do you hear of this day and age doing Captain Jack Sparrowish type deeds and exploits?
I don't know, but I imagine a lot of them probably act like him.
Yeah.
You know, this elected hobo king also gets burial privileges in a special cemetery that is reserved only for hobo kings.
Now that is a privilege.
Wow. That's crazy.
Man, I watched a movie called Train on the Brain, and apparently there's like hobos like really hopping trains and shit, like young hobos.
Yeah. No, like, I saw something, sorry to interrupt, but I saw something kind of like that where this dude, like twice a year, he was rich, like a millionaire, but twice a year, he would stay home from his home for like 6 to 8 weeks hopping trains and being a hobo.
Yeah.
And he never told his hobo friends what he really was because, you know, they'd kill him.
Yeah.
But yeah, people are still hobos.
Yeah, like there's like a little community, and like they go to the train yards and they sort of like sneak by, or they like get friendly with the train conductors and people in the rail yards. And they, like, know which trains are the most, like, comfortable to ride on and shit. And they, like, it's crazy. It's like a little subculture.
That's so strange, man.
And in this movie, like, they met another hobo, and, like, there was a hobo couple, and then they, like, broke up because they went, like, their own hobo ways. And they all had dreadlocks.
No, they did.
They were Rasta hobos.
Oh, you're lying.
No,
German.
Not at all.
German.
German in the name of the Lord. German.
Let me. Rasta hobos.
Yeah. Rasta bows.
Yeah.
Hostess. not to be confused with hostess.
Yeah.
By the way, Twinkies are back.
Twinkies are back.
Yep.
Back are the Twinkies.
Hey, Pat, you know how you like buried treasure?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
There's this old cowboy, like one of these millionaire Texas type guys.
Uh-huh.
He wrote this poem, and it's like a treasure poem, and it tells... He, like, went out and buried a chest of, like, real gold coins just so people would, like remember him. And he, like, gives these little vague clues, like, in his memoir. And he's got, like, a copy of his autobiography in that treasure chest. And then, like, so many $1 million worth of gold. And whoever can find it, it's theirs.
What are the specifics on
it? I don't know.
Where is it? Is it like in
out west
state?
Yeah, it's like out west.
What's this guy's name?
I can't remember. I found it on Vice.com.
Help me. What should I Google here? Crazy millionaire leaves treasure?
Yeah, something like Let's that. See.
Millionaire leaves buried treasure. Work, Google, work. Cancer-stricken millionaire. Forrest Finn, is that his name?
Yeah.
Well, here we go.
His name's Forrest, too.
There can be only one.
Oh, it's on MSN News. It's got to be too legit to quit.
Yeah. One of these days, he'll be on Yahoo.
When it hits Yahoo, that's when you know it's getting crazy. So we'll let that load, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit. We're going to take a quick 15-second break for station identification from a man that you all know and love as the lead singer of Fozzy and the first undisputed WWE champion, Chris Jericho. We'll be right back after a few words.
Hey, this is Chris Jericho of Fozzy, and you're listening to Kill Your Radio. If you stop listening, I'm going to cry, and that will kill you.
And we're back. Forrest still says there can be only one.
Do we need press passes for the Hobo Convention?
I wonder if they have a website.
I wonder if they have email.
What it was like. Oh, man, like Dirty Straggler at Hobo.com or something.
Yeah. Or well, if we go and we, like, meet the Hobo King, and then as it's all over, he, like, tries to, like, move in with us.
Yeah.
Like, come. He starts mooching up.
Oh, it's got a Wikipedia page.
What's that?
The National Hobo Convention.
You've opened a can of worms for us.
I can't believe we're still on this. The National Hobo Convention is held on the second weekend of every August. Oh. Since 1900 in the town of Britt, Iowa. Organized by the local Chamber of Commerce and known throughout the town as the annual Hobo Days celebration. The National Hobo Convention is the largest gathering of hobos, rail riders, and tramps who gather to celebrate the American traveling worker.
Tramps? What about?
There's a parade.
I remember one time in high school, one of my teachers asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I told her I wanted to be a hobo. And she said, you want to be a homo? And so I was horribly embarrassed in front of a room full of
demented fourth graders.
Demented high school students alike.
Anyway, here's the info on the parade. Traditionally, there's been a parade on the Saturday at 10 a.m. where everyone can let their hobo spirit soar as they participate in
the parade. Let's let it soar, guys.
A phrase that describes the parade is, some in rags, some in tags, some in velvet gowns.
Wow.
According to the Chamber of Commerce. Whether you're part of this large grand parade or a spectator, the spirit of the day is sure to capture your mood. Marching bands, queens, business floats, children, adults, and hobos all come down the streets in one long line and share the fun that only a hobo convention can provide. This is directly after they mug you.
Man, what?
And there are other...
whimsically written.
There are other Wikipedia entries. Other events during Hobo Weekend include the Hobo 5K and 10K walk/run. The Hobo King and Queen Coronation, the Hobo Museum, the Hobo Auction.
walk/run/stagger/amble.
The Hobo That's Memorial cool. Service, the Hobo Sunday Outdoor Church Service. Okay, here's one that I do not get. It cannot be in any universe would work. The Hobo Classic Car Show.
I mean, hobos got cars.
Yeah, I mean, isn't like a prereq of being a hobo that you don't have transportation?
Maybe they just made a typo on the Wikipedia article and left out the T at the end of car.
Wow. Hobo Classic Cart Show. There's hobo arts and crafts and various hobo musical entertainment. The Hobo Jungle is open to the public.
The Hobo Jungle.
Wow. And there's a website, hobo.com/convention.
I wonder if C6 Steve plays there. You ever seen that guy?
No.
He's like, he plays like these homemade, like, two-string guitars and stuff. He's like the world's most famous hobo musician.
When you say homemade, what does he make them out of?
I think they're like cigar box guitars and stuff.
Listen to this. They have got a list of every hobo king and queen since 1900.
Proudly is Remus on this list.
Let's see. Let's find some of the great names on here. The first hobo king was Charles Noe.
Can you spell that last name?
N-O-E.
Oh.
From 1933 to 1935, Hairbreath Harry was the hobo king. Only to be ousted in 1936 by Scoop Shovel Scotty.
Uh-oh.
In 1949, we seen Cannonball Eddie get the coronation, with the queen being Boxcar Myrtle.
There's not a sexier name than Myrtle.
And 1964, we see the coronation of Beefsteak Charlie with no queen.
God, fancy beefsteak.
Let's see who else we got here. We've got Sparky Smith in 1977. Mountain Dew in 1983, Fry Pan Jack in 84, and Frisco Jack in 85, Ramblin' Rudy in 86, 87 goes to Alabama Hobo. Not very creative, but I'm sure it does the job.
It's not even the name.
Oh, here's the script. 1992, Roadhog USA is the hobo's name.
Oh, my God.
God rest his soul.
Here we have, after Roadhog USA 1993, we see the coronation of Iowa Blackie.
That's an offensive hobo name.
With his queen being Blue Moon.
Oh, my God.
1996, the king is Liberty Justice, with his queen being Come On, Pat. Man, let me ask you a question.
Come On, Pat.
In 2013, the reigning hobo kings and queens are Frog and Bookworm Bonnie. Sorry, Your Majesty.
She does a lot of reading on the backs of freight trains.
2002, we had the king was Redbird Express, and the queen was Nightingale. 2008, the king was Stretch, and the queen was Connecticut Tootsie.
Well,
how do you pick your hobo name?
I don't know. It's probably like a system, like how you pick your porn name.
Or they make random name generators that you can find on Google.
Oh man. Hobo name generator. Googling that right now. Forrest, I wish you never would have. Oh, that's the first result on Google, too.
Oh, my God.
Forrest, you never should have. Never should have.
Pat. When you're laying awake at night and you can't sleep, it means you're awakening somebody's dream somewhere.
What?
I just wanted you to know that.
What?
Thanks.
What just happened? I'm confused. Anyway.
The more you know.
Dun, 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 dun.
The more you know, the less you know. I don't know. Anyway, while the hobo name generator's loading, we'll track back to Ned's story about Forrest Finn, the millionaire, who says he was diagnosed with cancer 20 years ago, and he apparently has left a treasure chest with $2 million in it. So... Well, okay, so here's the deal. He's from Santa Fe. He says he started filling his treasure chest with gold when he was diagnosed with cancer more than 20 years ago and given just a few years to live, but he survived and says he decided to hide the treasure and offer clues to anyone who wants to find it. So apparently, he's like dug it up and moved it a couple of times.
Well, that ain't fair.
And then he published a memoir called The Thrill of the Chase. And I don't know. There's not really a lot about it. We got to look more into that. definitely have to look more into that. This ain't a hobo name generator.
It's so easily confused with other things.
It's just like they've got a card that looks like a magic card and it says Hobomancer. Oh, God. They just have some random names listed like Donnie Fussy Shagamile Lieber, Wayne Siren Tracker Van Buren, Mama Cassandra Bony Washout Flint the Arms Poker.
Yeah, yeah.
Heat Busting Ford the Creepy. Yeah, these are all busts. Sorry we wasted your time.
You've bewildered me, Pat.
But I didn't even say Dr. Earl Jack Slippery Moonshiner Zevon. Oh, my God. Or Made Riverside Luton Mountain Skillet. Or R.Z. Margaret 35th Darnell from Louisville.
Close that laptop first. I've had enough.
Or close cost needs you in London. Anyway.
You know, I think of a hobo lifestyle being something similar to a real life Game of Thrones type deal.
Elaborate, please.
Yeah. Elaborate a lot.
Yes.
You know, you've got all these names like, do you still have that list pulled up over there?
Please don't read more.
Mama Cassandra Bony Washout Flint the Arms Poker.
Exactly. You know, with names like that, you've got like such and such of House such and such, the third of such and such. Mm-hmm. I just see a hobo lifestyle being like a every man for himself type deal. You know what I mean? You don't know what I mean.
Like hobos walk around with shields with a like tin cans and
with epic music.
So you're saying that hobos cosplay?
Yeah.
That's hobos.
What if you went to the park and you saw a bunch of hobos cosplaying like Dragon Ball Z?
Oh my God.
Instead of throwing commie homie eyes, they throw like empty bottles of Mad Dog.
Wouldn't like half the cosplay just have them stand there screaming at each other or making loud noises like they're having intense inner body pains that they can't seem to ready.
Oh my God. You know, one time in Lexington, I was driving down New Circle Road, and you know, in one of those medians that are like grassy, there was a man who I suspect to be a hobo or a vagrant of some sort. He had stretched out like a picnic sheet, had a boombox playing, and he was dancing and like drinking a big bottle of liquor by himself.
That was probably the 2001 Hobo King, Grandpa Dudley.
Yeah, that's probably Grandpa Dudley in action.
Continue, I'm sorry.
Well, that was the whole story.
Oh. Well. That came to an abrupt end.
I know.
It was more of an observation.
It was just a little observation.
So I saw a hobo once.
Yeah. Well, he had considerably more style than his peers.
If they were his peers.
Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Moving on. Ned was talking about the critically acclaimed Showgirls earlier.
Yes.
And we got into this discussion about how that was the absolute dirtiest thing you could ever watch on television.
It was. It was rated like 15 double N or something.
Yeah. And Ned and I were talking about how you would stay up late.
And be a little creeper.
To see Jesse Spano with boobies.
Yeah.
And then Forrest was like, I've never seen it. But he's got a few more years of internet.
Yeah, than us. Child of the internet age.
Yeah.
took the fun out of the hunt.
Yep.
Or it took the... I won't even go there.
It was always a task. You had to wait till your parents went to bed and sit up late and keep it on showtime.
Turn the volume down to like one.
Yep.
Half.
Yep. And then you'd sit there and wait.
Wait.
For that epic pool scene.
You'd sit there and you'd willingly like watch the end of Gremlins 2.
Yeah,
because you knew like it was gonna be awesome.
Yeah,
after it was over you'd watch the credits like just wanting all the grips and
the associate best boy
director douchebags to scroll by so you could get on with it.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't need to know who catered Gremlins to.
And then you'd sit there through the previews of the upcoming drama films. And
you know what sucks is now they cut that shit out.
Yeah, when it don't matter
anymore. Yeah, after I've watched and memorized the cast and crew of Doc Hollywood or something. Yeah.
The cast and crew of Delta Force 2.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to watch some of John Clad Van Damme. some of his later work.
John was clad in Van Damme.
Some of his straight to laser disc work.
Yeah. And then it came on.
Yeah, and it said, this movie contains severe graphic disturbing nudity. It's like, oh, yes.
The craziest simulated sex you've ever seen.
Copious amounts of fornication.
Contains adult content.
And you sat there, and you were watching it. And there came Jesse Spano out stripping, and he kept wondering, why couldn't it be Kelly Kapowski?
I know.
But it still worked. It still worked well.
And then you heard some of the greatest dialogue of any movie ever.
There was dialogue?
Yeah, there was crazy dialogue.
The only thing I can remember other than all the nakedness was that that little black girl that she lived with got beat up by that guy.
Mm-hmm. And she got revenge by painting her nipples red and sneaking into his fortress
and beating him to death with like a shoe.
Yeah,
didn't she use a
after
shoe?
He died slowly from her poison nipple.
Yes, old Jesse Spano. She wasn't on Saved by the Bell after that anymore.
I know.
That movie was probably done after Saved by the Bell, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'd say that probably ended her Saved by the Bell work. If it hadn't already ended.
Yeah. Well.
And then, surprisingly, the next one to make an adult film was Screech.
I forgot about that.
And he did a Dirty Sanchez demonstration.
What do you think about that?
Is your head exploding?
It's done went past exploding. It's imploding.
Yeah.
I think that deserves an ag-yod.
Ag-yod.
Well done, sir.
Touche.
It's almost out of board levels.
Do what?
On guard.
Yeah.
Repost.
Repost. Hashtag. So... Yawn. Ned has a story about the Amityville Horror.
I watched a movie, and it wasn't the Amityville Horror. It was my Amityville Horror. And I learned some things. That the kid, one of the children that lived in the house, his stepdad was George Lutz, the father, the one with the helmet hair. And he's one of the most intense people I've ever seen. If if you're in the mood for bizarre facial expressions and sudden outbursts of anger and weirdness, that'd be a good one to check out. He claims that everything that happened in the Amityville Horror really happened. And it makes you wonder if he's just, like, maybe a little unhinged. And it makes sense that he would make something like that up. Or maybe being possessed and terrorized by a haunted house made him a little edgy. I don't know.
Yeah, I hear that demonic possession has a few negative side effects associated with it.
Well, he was like chain smoking cigarettes and raising his eyebrows in a peculiar manner.
Damn, dang old man, I'm smoking my sonomas.
But, I don't know. Just to tie in, there was an appearance by Lorraine Warren, whom we spoke about with our last guest. And I don't know. They had he made some claims that I had not been familiar with. I don't think Pat or Forrest had either. He claims that George Lutz, his stepfather, who he obviously hated, was something of a Satanist, and he had trained his mind to where he could move objects telekinetically. Even before they moved into the Amityville Horror House. Seem reasonable to you?
I mean, if he's a Satanist, he's a Satanist.
I mean, if he's got a good grasp on telekinesis, that's good for that guy. All you, bro.
Well, I mean, do you think George Lutz... I think he's dead now, but, I mean, did they have him, like, in a Magneto prison or something, like, before he died? Is this something we need the K-Wire team to look into?
Do we need to get the interns on this?
Yeah, do we need to partner up with Rhino Repair and do an expose?
Hold on, I'll look up George Lutz.
Okay.
You continue telling your Amityville story.
Well, that's about it.
You know,
it's just an interesting documentary to check out. And
like I said last week, I'm kind of a skeptic on these things. But, you know, after our guest last week, my skepticism's kind of in between right now.
Yeah, she was very adamant about everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually made me question some of my non-existent beliefs and turn my non-existent beliefs into somewhat existent beliefs.
Well, you know, it's like, I've never seen a ghost. I've never been possessed or any of that business. But these people are saying that it's all real. Tell them, man. You've just got that to go on.
George Lutz is alive.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is he in Magneto prison?
There's nothing in here about that.
Oh. Okay.
But, I mean, is Wikipedia the most reliable source on the internet?
Yeah. Yeah. Wikipedia is how I found out that Tycho Brahe, the 15th century Danish astronomer, was a gay flight attendant that gave 47 people AIDS.
Well, now that's a lovely story.
That's what Wikipedia told me one night.
Wikipedia also told me that, little history lesson, during World War II, while the Russians... Correction, while the German forces were attacking Stalingrad, the Russians attacked the rear of the German forces in Operation Uranus. True story.
What's the weirdest thing you've ever seen on, like, a hacked Wikipedia page? Like, have you ever seen anything, like, obviously vandalized?
Well, there was a Wikipedia page about you once.
Oh. Did you make it?
No. Or was it about Wilder? I can't remember. I don't know. I've never really seen any good hacked ones.
That one about Tycho Brahe, for some reason, it stands out as being like the main one.
I don't know. I've never seen any really good hacked ones.
back in the old days, it was a lot more prevalent. Now they've got like Wikipedia police or something on guard.
The Wiki police.
Yeah.
If you do find a good hacked page, it's gone in 5 minutes.
Yeah, they clean it up quick. But they still try.
You got to give it to them.
You got to give it to them people trying to write crazy stuff on Wikipedia.
Speaking of crazy stuff, tell us about Barney.
About Barney?
Yep.
Well, Barney's a big purple dinosaur that that hops in an atrocious way. You really study Barney's hopping pattern?
No.
I mean, he does quite a whimsical hop. No, I've been watching a lot of Barney with the baby, and I've come to the conclusion that I should in no way be associated with children's shows. Because on Barney today, they opened up a portal in the wall, and Beethoven came out.
Oh, no.
And he was like, "Hello, kids, I'm Beethoven."
Oh, no.
And I was like, "Look at that, honey. That's Beethoven. He searched his whole life in vain for someone to love."
I just had a Big Bang Theory moment. You know how when Sheldon will say something, somebody will ask, like, "Why?" or something, Leonard goes, "Here we go."
Yeah.
I almost done the "here we go" when you said Beethoven came out of the portal.
It's a true story. Beethoven was on Barney. And so anyway, he's like, "I bet you were wondering how Beethoven knew how to compose music when he couldn't hear." And Beethoven's like, "Listen, kids. Have you ever imagined something? Think of a happy memory. That's what I do." And I was like, "That's right, honey." Beethoven was scared and hated his life because he was a composer who couldn't hear. So he raged and screamed endlessly in his apartment while he banged on his piano searching for sound.
Like a poetic tragedy feel to it.
Ned's life has a poetic tragedy feel to it.
But anyway, there was another one, like where they went to the dentist.
Oh, God, Mozart was there?
No, this is the dentist.
No.
Like, the dentist was there.
Mozart wouldn't.
Who was the cameo for the dentist?
There has to be
a cameo.
Was it Mozart?
No, it was like a dentist.
Oh.
And I was like,
Mozart.
They was like, "The dentist is your friend. The dentist fixes your teeth." And I'm like, "Look, honey, there's a guy who purposely fucks up your teeth so he can charge you out the ass for a root canal." Whoops. The drill slipped. Looks like you're going to have to come back for another visit.
We're going to have to do major reconstructive surgery on your palate.
Yeah, it looks like we're going to have to break your jaw.
Here's a sucker.
Yeah, no. Mozart was the other episode.
So there was a Mozart?
No, there was just Beethoven.
No.
They should have got Mozart. He was a lot happier character.
It sounds like your experience with Barney is quite extensive. What?
It sounds to me like your experience with Barney is a little lacking.
Yeah. Well, no, there's a song that she loves on there, and it's like about... like going to the zoo. Like, my favorite animal at the zoo is the tiger because it's got stripes and claws. I'm like, "Look, honey, nature has made the perfect killing machine."
Other than a shark.
"This big 10-foot long monster is completely made of muscle and has sharp things that rip the life out of its prey."
And it's a cat.
Yeah. See how they bite directly into the neck? That's to bleed all the life's blood out.
And not only can it swim, it can climb any tree you climb.
Yeah. But I like Sesame Street. Unqualified.
Because you like Oscar the Grouch.
I do.
And that garbage can failure.
That was Oscar the Grouch.
Well, I just effed that up, didn't I?
Yeah, man, you're not a... The reason I like Sesame Street, too, is because you can watch the original ones on there from the 70s. And it's like Sesame Street mixed with Taxi Driver. They're in like the old shitty New York. Like it's all run down looking. And they're like all wearing, I don't know, like Chico and the Man mustaches and stuff.
Yo, Big Bird! It's like Cheech and Chong, I guess.
Yeah. They've got like strapped bell bottoms and a brown pea coat and a, like a green knit bogging on or something.
Oh my God.
Oh, it's amazing.
Welcome Back Cotter's on there.
Yeah, it's like Welcome Back Cotter. makes a cameo and sings a little song.
He sings his own theme song.
Yeah. Everybody's got mustaches.
That's why you like it. It's the mustache.
I like the mustaches. I do like Oscar the Grouch. The one I watched hit snowed and everything was really nice and pretty in Sesame Street. And Oscar, he like was talking to the guy with the bell bottoms on. He's like, "Look, Oscar, look at this nice snow." And Oscar's like, "Yeah, I know what can help it." And he like pours mud and like sawdust and stuff in it. And he's like, "Oscar, what did you do to this beautiful snow?" And he's like, "I don't know. I think it looks better or something." You know, like Oscar hates everybody. And he's like, "I'll tell you what I'm gonna do." He said, "This, you ruin this snow, I'm gonna throw it out in the street." And then Oscar says, "Go ahead." And a car goes by, and he, like, closes his lid down, and, like, mud flies all over that guy. And Oscar's like, "That's exactly what I wanted to happen, because I'm the evil green monster that lives in a trash can. I hate snow."
I hate snow.
It's like everybody puts up with his grouchiness, though.
Because he's on Sesame Street.
Yeah, I mean...
I don't know.
That show had such a great cast of characters.
It did.
It also had such a great backing for it. It's the only show in the existence of television that was each episode brought to you by a different letter of the alphabet.
It was indeed.
Well.
You know what, though? I was watching it, and I was wondering what the message was, like in some of these skits. Like, one of them is Grover was outside and it was snowing. He was, like, freezing to death. And Kermit was, like, inside in this nice warm house. And Grover come in. He's like, "Oh, Kermit." He's like, "I'm freezing to death." And he's like, "Well, Grover, won't you come in and warm up?" And he's like, "Kermit, give me those earmuffs. I will be warm." Well, he, like, goes back out in the snow and he, like, freezes to death again. And he's like, comes back, knocks on the door. And he's like, "Kermit, I'm freezing to death." And he's like, "Give me something else warm to put on." He's like, "Gee, Grover, won't you just come in and sit and get warmed up?" And Grover's finally, like, knocks on the door, and he's like, "I am freezing." And he said, "Well, Grover, won't you come in where it's warm?" He's like, "Grover, on the outside, it is cold. Inside, Kermit, nice and warm." So he, like, finally figures out that the inside of a house is warm, and he, like, goes in and locks Kermit out. And Kermit's out there like, "No, Grover, I'm freezing to death out here." And Grover's like, "I think I'm going to take a nap." And then it ends. What's that teaching kids?
Wasn't Kermit on the Muppets?
He was on both.
Really?
Yeah, that's the magic. This is Frog Monster. He's on both shows.
So what you're saying is, this talking frog is actually a dimension-traveling puppet.
He's like Quantum Leap.
He is. He's like Ziggy.
Where am I going today? Looks like I am a priest in Iowa who has to help save his wife's life or something. I don't know.
Who has to help a strange little puppet get warm?
Yeah. I know.
Forrest is dumbfounded.
Forrest, try your best to keep this from getting too ridiculous. You gotta save us with a little bit of a moment of levity here.
Folks out there in KYR land, today's episode has been brought to you by the letter Q.
Mm-hmm.
You know, only 26 of the episodes could have been brought to you by a different letter.
Yeah. Then there's reruns.
Man, shot a hole through your logic, didn't it?
I'm dumbfounded.
I wonder if Netflix, why don't they group each episode by letter? Like there's like all the X's.
Yeah. What if the X episodes were a little more racy?
Yeah.
Like, I bet the one that you're talking about where Grover killed Kermit.
Yeah, he, like, let a frog freeze to death in the snow.
That was an X episode.
Yeah. Oh, the X episodes.
Like, on this X episode, Big Bird is the Godfather. he's Don Corleone.
Yeah. Man, the count never gets old.
No.
How many times can you watch the count?
Do bad.
Yeah.
And then that instantly made me think of Family Guy.
Yeah.
Peter's like, is the count a vampire? And Brown's like, obviously.
Yeah. I love the count on Family Guy.
Two bats. He's kind of like Bill Cosby in a way.
I know. It's weird. It's like when you watch it, like the guy that's doing the voice, you can tell he's like trying to like get crazy and crazy with it. Like by the end of it, he's like, four, he's like trying to make it as crazy as he can.
He's almost having a stroke.
Yeah, there's like 20 seconds between each.
He's like,
Oh my God.
And then Cookie Monster. What can you even say about that alcoholic bastard? Cookie Junkie.
Beans for bourbon. Or Beam.
What's that teaching kids? Eat all the cookies.
That when you like something, you have to have it all the time.
Yeah. You got to go way overboard and overdo it and then like
aggravate everybody.
Ruin your relationship with everybody else.
I just want cookies.
I love how he eats them. He like chews them up with that like puppet mouth. And they just like fly everywhere.
He never eats them. No. They just disintegrate and fly out of his mouth.
Can you imagine the set of Sesame Street? There's like cookies everywhere.
Cookies and garbage.
Yeah.
And big false Bert. I so didn't mean it like that. Big false yellow bird feathers everywhere. Forrest don't know the false bird story.
You ever heard an old person call mask a false face?
Nope.
Well, they do.
Yeah, like if old timers, instead of being like
a Halloween mask.
Yeah, they'll be like, hey, come over with that big false face on and scared me. Well, we took it a little bit farther and got to False Bird.
You mean like?
Yes.
Gotcha.
You have to say it the right way, though. It's not false, it's false.
Yeah, it's false. False Bird.
False Bird.
pulled that big false burn out.
Went to town out there.
Am I hoping?
Pull that thing out and spit on it. It's cutting like a new file.
Lord.
They boys.
Hey, brother.
Man, oh, man. Well, folks.
Go ahead.
We've got Scarefest coming up in Lexington, Kentucky next month, September the 13th through the 15th.
Yeah.
Going to be a big bunch of famous people there. But you can get your autographs from them and this and that and other. You can buy stuff, sell stuff, trade stuff.
Yeah. You can get all kinds of Chaskis and... Well played, Forrest.
Touche.
Karma.
But we got that coming up. We're going to end the show tonight with a very special featured interview with Chris Jericho, lead singer of Fozzy. Next week, myself, Ned, and Forrest will all comment on said interview. We do have a very big announcement to make.
Possibly
the biggest announcement that Kill Your Radio's ever had.
Utterly gargantuan.
And this is not like Conan O'Brien saying this is the best show we've ever done every night.
Because it probably won't be the best show we've ever done.
But not even close.
But
the interview is spectacular.
The interview. It may be happening later this week. It may be happening early next week. But folks, Kill Your Radio will be interviewing none other than former lead singer of Pantera, current singer of Down, and his new project, Feeling the Illegals. We will be interviewing Mr. Philip Anselmo.
Yeah. And we will be conjuring the ghost of our friend.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then also, we've got an interview coming up with the former guitar player for the Misfits, Doyle. Working on a few more things as well. So everybody stay tuned. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/killyourradio12. So you can follow us and find out everything that's going on in our special little world.
Yeah.
And, hell, that's about it. We got an interview with Chris Jericho we're going to leave you with, but enjoy that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Awkward silence strikes again.
Let's all look at each other for a minute.
You couldn't hear. But there was a look of longing.
Yeah.
You both have beautiful eyes.
Well, thank you.
Mine changed color.
They're like mood rings on the eyes.
I've got mood eyes.
You've got eyes that were attacked by a cow.
Yeah.
They are mood eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, no, we can't end it yet. Forrest.
We can't end it.
Forrest, tell them about the bear.
Okay.
The bear. You mean the steel cage match?
Yes.
With bears.
Yep.
The grizzly wintergreen bear and the...
Kodiak.
Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, yeah. That's who it was.
Folks, within the next few episodes, we'll be having a special, special match commentated by none other than Ned between Winnie the Pooh... and a grizzly bear with special guest referee Triple H.
Time to play the game.
Oh my God. Ladies and gentlemen, I can guarantee you this, a bear will be pedigreed.
Well, guys, I didn't ask for this burden to fall unto me, but I shall take it.
Chill out, Frodo. You just commentating a bear match.
An epic bear match.
It's not like you're carrying them to Mount Doom.
What was your hobbit name? YOLO Swaggins.
YOLO Swaggins. You know, honestly, I see a match between Winnie the Pooh and a grizzly bear being kind of one-sided. Because I see Winnie the Pooh as, like, having innards made out of, I don't know.
Stuff and fluff.
Here's what I think. I think that Winnie the Pooh has a decided advantage if you don't give him any honey for about a week and he's jonesing. And then you just, like, sit a pot of honey in that bear's corner.
Mm-hmm.
Winnie the Pooh's gonna go back crap crazy.
He's gonna be jonesing for honey and freak out on that bear.
Steve would rip that bear into pieces.
He's like, Winnie the Pooh's got like a 5 o'clock shadow and he's smoking cigarettes.
He's like, oh, bother.
His like leg is shaking.
He was like, Pooh, have you seen my toe? He's like, why don't you fuck out?
He's like, I ain't got time for this shit anymore.
He pulls out a switchblade and holds it to Eeyore's neck.
Yeah, he's like threatening to cut Eeyore's throat.
He's like, I'm going to cut you like I did the rabbit.
Was the rabbit a girl or a boy?
I think the rabbit was a boy. It was just really like neurotic all the time, though.
Neurotic rabbit and...
I thought you said an erotic rabbit.
An erotic rabbit.
I think the only girl was Kanga.
Mm-hmm. And that Roo.
I thought Roo was a boy.
Was Roo a boy?
Yeah, Roo was a boy.
Oh, God.
Piglet was a boy.
It changes my whole childhood.
So Kanga was Roo's mother?
Yeah.
He did live in her pouch.
Yeah. They were like a symbiotic. Like parasite relationship.
Kangaroo.
Yeah.
That's deep.
Yeah.
That is deep.
Without one another, they couldn't express the kangaroo-ness of existence.
By them. That's deep, man. That's deep.
You know, for the longest time, I thought that tigers really did bounce.
They had tails that were made of springs.
Their tops were made out of rubber.
So what you're saying is Barney and Tigger, somewhere in the evolutionary tree, are descended from one another.
I'm saying that the wonderful thing about Tiggers is Tiggers are wonderful things.
So you're saying that already the most terrifying, killing, like brutal monster, predator, can also bounce incredibly long distances on its tail.
Well, their tops are made out of rubber and their bottoms are made out of springs.
Well, I guess that's scientifically valid.
They're bouncy, trouncy, flouncy, pouncy, fun.
Can't argue with that.
That's foolproof.
You know what the most wonderful thing about Tears is? He wasn't the only one.
Oh, there's more of these beasts.
Yeah. There's even albino ones.
Well,
I seen one at the zoo. Do you think they have albino tigers at the North Pole? Wouldn't that be suited for their photo?
All the tigers that live at the North Pole.
So what you're saying is, in the North Pole, there's a predator that's got sharp claws and teeth of death and destruction that's bouncy and can camouflage?
Not just bouncy. Bouncy, trouncy, flouncy, and pouncy. I never thought about the pouncy part until right now.
Yeah. You know, tigers are like so badass, like they don't even have to hide.
They can just stand there and you won't see them.
Like, as far as animals go, like they're wearing pimp suits.
They're wearing like the most obvious brand
shit.
Of the animal kingdom, the tiger is a pimp named Slickback.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
I don't know.
How did this happen?
I don't know.
All right, that's all the time we got. We got an interview with Chris Jericho. Come back next week. Hopefully, next week we'll have the interview with Phil. If not, we'll have it really soon. Scarefest in Lexington, September 13th through the 15th. Buy your ticket. Go down there. Have a hell of a time. I'm Pat. That's Forrest. That's Ned, who always has to say,
listen to Fozzie.
Enjoy the Jericho interview, folks. We'll see you next week. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very, very special guest on the line, Chris Jericho of Fozzy, and you may know him from some kind of sports entertainment he used to do. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. Doing a bunch of interviews today, getting ready for the big tour coming up.
Well, let's talk about that. What is the itinerary for the tour? How many U.S. dates do you guys have?
Not sure the exact amount, but it's about 30 dates. Starts September 12th in Long Island, New York, and then ends, goes all the way across the country and back, ends up in Atlanta on October 18th, I believe it is. So it's a pretty long tour, but it's going to be a good one, very extensive. Most of it with Saxon, legendary English metal band, their first U.S. tour in a few years, and our first U.S. tour since Uproar last summer. So really excited, man. We just got back from England a couple days ago, did a big European tour, Scotland, Wales, Belgium, Switzerland, Germany, Austria, Denmark, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been a good year for us, that's for sure. We've been touring all over and playing a lot of great shows and meeting a lot of great people and building up our fan base. It's getting bigger and bigger every day, so it's been a great year for Fozzy.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. And the thing I love about Fozzy is you guys have that kind of classic metal sound going on. I love that.
Well, I mean, it's a combination. I mean, we love, obviously, you know, classic bands like Maiden and Sabbath and Dio and Scorpions. But we also, you know, there's also modern edge to it. We love Avenged Sevenfold and Bullet for My Valentine and those type of bands. But I think the difference is that we really dig the bands from the 70s, like Journey and Styx and Foreigner and the harmonies that they had back in the days when everybody in the band sang. And that's what we have. I mean, four of the guys in our band sing, and there's a lot of vocal harmonies going on. So I always say, like, you know, people say, what does Fozzy sound like? And I would say, if Metallica and Journey had a bastard child, it would sound like Fozzy. And I think that's a perfect description, because we're very, very heavy riffs, very melodic choruses, a lot of harmonies, a lot of groove. So it's something a little bit different from what's going on today. I think it's one of the reasons why we've gotten so much traction and gotten so big over the last couple of years.
I was actually going to ask about that comment I'd read that you'd said before, that Fozzy was the bastard child of Metallica and Journey.
Yeah, it's kind of my stock answer, because I think it really gives the perfect analogy of what we sound like and who we are as a band. And you know, like I said, there's a lot of reasons for that, but I think our influences really shine through. And, you know, you got a guy like Rich Ward, who's kind of pioneered a lot, you know, the whole kind of rap rock thing in the early 90s. He's always had that groove and always had that tone of his guitar, that chunk. And, you know, over the last couple of Fozzy records, we've really honed in and focused in on what we do best, and that's what we do best. So, and like I said, it is a little bit different. If you want to get to the next level in this business, you got to do something that's a little bit outside of the norm. So kind of created our own little style, so to speak, our own little sound. And, you know, it's really working for us, for sure.
Definitely. I mean, I love the Sin and Bones album, and it's actually gotten several great reviews. You were premiered at number one on the Billboard Heat Seekers chart, you know.
We signed Century Media last year, which is, you know, the biggest record company we've ever been with, and we really wanted to put out our best record, because we knew, you know, the spotlight would be on us, so to speak, and the microscope would be on us. And we really worked hard to create our Black album. And what I mean by that is the Black album is it's a complete journey from beginning to end. All of the mood of it is similar, the sound of it is similar, it has a certain tone and a feel to it. And we wanted to have the same with Sin and Bones, and that's kind of what we accomplished. It's like from the first song to the 10th song, it takes you on a roller coaster ride, it takes you on a musical journey, but all the songs, even though they're very diverse, they have the same feel and the same mood and tone, like I said, to them. And, you know, we thought it was our best work, but you never know what everyone else is going to think until it gets released. And when it did, it was, you know, critically acclaimed, our best-selling record, our highest-charting record, our best-reviewed record. We've done the most shows tour-wise for this record, and people keep wanting to see us, so we keep going. And we were going to stop the tour in August, and we got the September-October tour, and we were going to end after that, and then we got another tour for Australia in December. So it just continues to roll forward. But, you know, we really focused on making this album special. And like I said, it really was the perfect representation of who we are as a band, and gained a lot of new fans because of that.
Right. And, you know, the opening track, Spider in My Mouth, just the beginning of it is so, like, creepy, man, with the little, I don't know, I love stuff like that. It's little things, little things like that makes an album really jump at you and be really cool.
Yeah, well, we wanted something that had a certain intro to it that you could, you know, play before the show, you know what I mean? Where people know, okay, the show's going to start, and here's kind of the groove that builds up, and the tone and the mood. You know, like the greatest albums of all time have that little bit of an intro piece. And Spider was the perfect opening song. It, another great representation of who we are, very heavy, with a lot of harmony, a lot of groove to it, and very interesting lyrics. I read that phrase, I woke up with a spider in my mouth, in a Stephen King book somewhere, and I just thought it was so interesting, and so many different visuals that you could, you know, when you read something like that, you get a mental picture instantly that you can't forget, you know. And so woke up with a spider in my mouth, and I was like, oh, that's pretty gross, you know.
Yeah.
I just thought it was the perfect thing to write a song about, and kind of the images for it. And then the creepy intro fits it perfectly.
Oh, yeah, it's great. It's great. So you guys, you've done a lot of the European festivals. You've played with tons and tons of bands. Who were you like? Who did you get starstruck with?
Well, I mean, at this point, you know, we've been playing for so long. We know so many guys and know so many bands. But it's always a little bit intimidating to play with Metallica. We've played with them on three separate occasions. We even toured with them in Australia in February. And even though I wouldn't go as far as saying starstruck, you're still thinking, like, holy shit, this is Metallica. You know, we're actually on tour with Metallica. And when you see them backstage to talk to them, like, oh, nice guys. But there's always a little bit of, like I said, oh, my God.
Yeah.
So, but once again, I mean, it's cool. You start out as a fan of these bands and then move into being, you know, acquaintances, then peers, and then eventually friends. And that's kind of what it's all about. It's a cool thing that happened when I first started wrestling, too. You know, you're sharing a locker room with Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair and all these guys you grew up watching, but then you realize that you have your fanboy moment and then move on, because you got to be professional, and then you got to whip some ass and be their equals or try and be better than them. And that's, you know, that's what we're doing with Ozzy. We want Metallica's job.
Exactly.
So even though, you know, we're respect through the roof with them and in awe of them, it's still our job to go out there and try and whip their ass every night, which isn't easy, but I mean, that's what you have to do.
Oh yeah, they definitely have one of the most, if not the most rabid fan base ever.
Absolutely, totally.
And you're one of those.
Yeah, well, of course, man. Yeah, you know, who isn't a Metallica fan if you like heavy music?
Exactly.
I mean, revolutionary, you know, pioneering. You know, same with Anthrax. We just toured with Anthrax in Europe, you know, in August a couple weeks ago, and it was amazing to, you know, I remember standing in line waiting for tickets to see them in 1988, and now here we are 25 years later on the same bill. You know, our shirts are next to their shirts on the merch stand, or, you know, I took a picture of the backstage pass that said Anthrax Fozzy on it. You know, stuff like that is cool for me still. Because if you let that stuff go and take it for granted, you know, it's easy to forget where you came from. It's easy to forget how hard you've worked to get to a certain position where, you know, like I said, we're on tour with Anthrax, we're on tour with Metallica, we're on tour with Slayer. It's like, these are bands that kind of shaped who we are as people, and now we're, you know, on the road with them. It's a pretty cool thing to be able to say.
Right. So it's like, if you stop being a fan,
you
lose the passion.
And if you stop appreciating, you know, things like that, that's when you have problems, I think, you know. I remember when I went to Metallica 30 anniversary shows, I was talking to Hetfield there, and he was super excited because they got all these people to give their well wishes on Metallica's 30th anniversary, and Michael Shankar was one of the people that they got for the video, and James was just flipping out. I was like, Michael Shankar knows my name, Michael Shankar knows my name, and, you know, even Hetfield at this stage of the game still can be a mark for somebody, and that's cool. You know, you never stop being a fan, that's for sure.
Definitely. So, I know you've probably been asked before, but how did you get into metal?
How did I get into
heavy metal?
Well, I was a huge Beatles fan when I was a kid, like, and not just, you know, superficially, like, kind of read every book and knew everything I could learn about them and had every record by the time I was, you know, 10 years old. And then in the early 80s, it kind of wasn't fashionable to be a Beatles fan, as weird as that is. They kind of went through a phase where you almost kind of a nerd if you like the Beatles. Everybody was into Loverboy and the Little River Band and stuff like that. But then when I went to junior high school, I noticed that all the girls were wearing shirts with, you know, Ozzy on it or Judas Priest or, you know, all these type of bands. And I thought, well, if I'm ever going to actually get a date, I might have to start listening to some of these bands and check it out. You know, if I'm ever going to talk to girls about music, I can't talk about the Beatles if they're wearing an Ozzy shirt. So I went to a comic book store and bought Blizzard of Oz used on cassette for $2 and, you know, put it on, and that was the end of it. It was a whole new world that had opened up for me. But also, too, it's funny. I remember listening to, you know, the first track, I Don't Know, then it's Crazy Train, and then Goodbye to Romance comes on, and it's like, that's a Beatles song. I didn't realize how influenced Ozzy was by the Beatles as well. So it's kind of like it all kind of mashes together. Music is music. When you're a fan, you're a fan. But basically got into heavy metal for the same reason that so many other guys do, because of chicks.
Right. And the Beatles transcend all forms of music.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. I mean, and so influential on every type of band. You know, and also in a lot of ways, one of the first heavy metal bands. I mean, we listen to Helter Skelter or Revolution or I Want You, She's So Heavy. It's like nobody was playing music that heavy at the time. You know, this is pre-Sabbath, pre-Blue Cheer, et cetera, et cetera. So I always claim that, you know, in a lot of ways, the Beatles, maybe not the first heavy metal band, but definitely one of the first bands to play heavy metal music. So it's another thing they almost kind of invented.
Right. So, I know the Sin and Bones came out last year, but when can fans maybe expect a new album to start being recorded or released?
Well, we're already working on it already. Songwriting is in the works. Definitely going to start recording it in January, February, March, that time frame, and then want to release it next summer. Get ready to tour. You know, go back to Europe or do some summer festivals here, or do a summer tour in the States, whatever it may be. So within the next year, for sure.
Right. And for your WWE fans, can they expect any more surprises, like surprise return from Jericho like he did at Royal Rumble?
Yeah, I don't know, man. It's like my schedule now is based around Fozzy, and it gets busier and busier. And I loved my work with the WWE this year. I think it's one of the best runs that I ever had. It seemed like every match was better than the next. I was really in the groove, and I really enjoyed it. But now that I've been gone for, you know, a month or whatever it's been, so much stuff that's popped up in the meantime that, you know, I'm not saying I won't come back, but I have no plans as of right now.
Right. And so, I guess, you know, I'm a big wrestling fan too. So with WWE, is it hard to transition? I know it's all performing, but is it hard to transition from doing music and going to wrestling and then coming back? Is that a strange transition for you? Is it something
you're
used to?
Well, I mean, if you're doing it, like, on a day-by-day basis, which I've done a couple times over the year, over the past year, just because of different circumstances, it's very hard. Like, this past April, we were over in England touring with Fozzy, and then I had a night off when Raw was in London, and I just was close to London, so I went and worked the Raw show. And it's hard to, you know, be in rock and roll mode, then go into wrestling mode for a night, and then go back to rock and roll mode. I mean, there's definitely a mental preparation that you need. So that's why, you know, like I said, my schedule is based around Fozzy now. I can't go back and forth. It's very hard to do that physically and mentally. A little bit confusing, I think, for the fans as well. Like, which one is he doing? And I don't have a problem. I've done both things my whole life. I've been playing in bands since I was 12 and been a wrestling fan since I was 10. But, you know, for me at this point, the band has grown so much, and we've gotten so much traction and so much momentum that I'd be crazy not to put all my efforts into what we're doing with Fozzy. And the WWE will always be there, and like I said, but my days of being a full-time wrestler are over at this point.
Right. Well, definitely miss seeing you every week, because the thing that I always loved about you on WWE is you're so good at the polars. If you're a bad guy, you're so easy to hate, and if you're a good guy, you're so easy to love. You just pull it off so well.
Yeah, well, it's all show business, man, you know. But I got to wrap it up, dude. I'm at the end of my 20 minutes.
All right, man. Chris Jericho, thank you so much for talking with us.
Very cool, man. Thank you. See you on tour.
All right,
go to FozzyRock.com for all the dates.
Thank you.
Thanks, brother. Here's Johnny.
Scarefest 6, the largest horror and paranormal convention in the United States, returns to the Lexington Center in Lexington, Kentucky this September on Friday the 13th through Sunday the 15th.
Meet over 40 of your favorite horror and paranormal celebrities, including Friday the 13th director Sean Cunningham and several stars who played Jason in the movies. Also meet Jeffrey Combs, Bruce Davison, Aaron Goodwin, Josh Gates, and many others. This year, experience The Portal, a full gaming con, your gateway to the ultimate fan experience. For tickets and info, visit thescarefest.com.
Scarefest 6, this September, beginning Friday the 13th through Sunday the 15th. At the Lexington Center in Lexington, Kentucky. Be brave if you dare, but don't come alone.
Presented by Ghost Chasers International. What are you doing Friday the 13th?